Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. Hibiscus, beautiful flower. Well, they make it into a tea, and hibiscus is a potent neuroprotective agent for the prevention of induced Alzheimer's disease, Cairo University. Good study. I'll talk more about it and a lot of other things on health and healing today. Then we're going to take a little journey. I'm not going to do a commentary today. I'm saving that for tomorrow. Something brand new about Wikipedia, something they have acknowledged. Now, we're our 72 articles and 9 letters to their board and their law firm for Wikimedia Foundation accusing them of all this bias and character assassination. Did that prompt what they have brought forward? Interesting, because it was in the upcoming lawsuits in discovery, and that's where you win in discovery, that we intended to prove this point. Well, they proved it for us. So today, for those of you citizen journalists who care about the truth and how biased and utterly devoid of any legitimacy Wikipedia media is, in our opinion, we have published the first of their own internal documents that we'd never even known existed. And then tomorrow, I'm going to invite someone on the program, whether it's Deepak Chopra or Robert Kennedy Jr. or Rupert Sheldrake, someone who is prominent, who's led a noble life in the public service, who has been character assassinated by Wikimedia or Wikipedia. And then I'm going to present a brand new article, probably the hardest hitting article I've ever written about Wikipedia. And this is just the beginning. If they thought the first 72 articles were hard hitting, way do they prepare for the next 72? Yeah, we have 72 articles all set, plus lawsuits, and we're taking them on. In any case, I am going to give some insights today about being a winner. And you're not just going to hear from me. This is a very uplifting, motivating, and inspired way of looking at life, especially when so many people's lives are broken down, where they're feeling there's a limitation of what they can do, that there's a scarcity of love and respect and empathy and help. Well, I want to show you how we can reverse that and break through all the different crises that we're in. And you'll hear Dr. Janine DePierre, Dr. Brenda Shoshona, Virginia Reed, Gina Ogden, Dr. Henry Grayson, Mitchell Rabin, and many others who I've interviewed for this segment. It'll be at the end of the show. Now, normally on our progressive commentary hours, the hardest hitting hour that we can do on radio every Tuesday evening, I'm either going to have Paul Street on, because I believe that Paul Street is about to get virtually eviscerated by the liberal community, of which he has been a card-carrying member and at the front of some of the greatest articles. A union organizer, a PhD, a historian, and absolutely right spot on all the things he's written, except this time he took on Black Lives Matter. And that's simply not allowed. You're not allowed to not only take him on, you're not allowed to do anything except bow down, you know, prostrate yourself in all your truths to their single truth. Well, I'm going to share what I consider will be maybe his last article, because everything's going to come down on his head. So I'll share why he is about to be attacked and what you didn't know about Black Lives Matter. That'll be on today's show. But we're also going to hear from Malcolm X today. And we're going to hear from Martin Luther King today. We have a lot to share, all based upon the idea of empowering us. Also, John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute on the Supreme Court. No consequences for police who destroy homes, mistakenly shoot 10-year-old boys, or sick police dogs on suspects already under control and handcuffed. So what you've been witnessing are not just episodic, rare situations. It is endemic, not just on people of color, but on Caucasians, almost at 10 times to 20 times that amount. But no one's recording it. And if they are, no one's doing anything about it. So it's a serious situation, and we're going to address it because we don't want to see it reformed. I do not want to see the police reformed. I want to see them completely, totally changed, 100% changed. And I have some new figures on the police abusing their own family members. This is an important thing, showing you we've got the wrong people who are out there. Anyhow, we have an interesting show. Always start with the latest on health and healing. According to news reporting originating from Cairo, the hibiscus plant, which is the Cebdarphia malvacea, is one of the well-known traditionally used remedies worldwide. It exhibited numerous pharmacological properties, including it's a strong antioxidant, it's an antidepressant, it's a sedative, it is anti-inflammatory, it is anti-proliferative, it is antimicrobial, it is neuroprotective. In fact, when I'm dealing with some animals that need to be handled for parasites, and they're too wild or too tough to get near, you give them some hibiscus tea, it calms them way down. And it's a non-toxic, natural ingredient. It works for people as well. So the aim of the study was to highlight the mechanisms underlying the neuroprotective effects of the extracts in hibiscus, both the white and red hibiscus. I grow hibiscus. I have hibiscus. And the reason I began growing hibiscus was for lizards. Lizards love hibiscus. They thrive on them. And they like to eat hibiscus and then go lay in the sun, especially iguanas. And I rescued some iguanas. Person had them in a bathtub, of all things, with a grow light on them. That's not their life. So then they could travel anywhere. No cages. And, of course, they're going to stay where there's love and food and a safe environment. Just like the peacocks. Peacocks are not pinned, meaning their flight wings are not cut. They can go anywhere. Why do they stay here? Because you could hand feed them. There's trust. Now, there's plenty of food. They eat the ticks and worms. Never had a tick. I haven't seen a tick. And yet, a lot of people have ticks. Which is, by the way, one of the reasons when I had an opportunity to open up a veterans village to help homeless vets upstate New York, found a beautiful place. But it was in the woods. And I'm thinking, that's just great. Someone's coming in with post-traumatic stress disorder, Gulf War syndrome, neurological problems, digestive problems, skin problems, and now you're going to get Lyme's disease? That doesn't work for me. So we're doing it elsewhere. And it's all ready to go, by the way. More on that when we, once we've completed the first 6 months. And now it's a hypothesis. But I know what I've done with individual Gulf War vets. So we're going to see if we can completely reverse 100% of post-traumatic stress disorder, 100% of Gulf War syndrome, chelating, detoxifying their body, rebuilding the muscle mass, helping them redevelop the skills they once had, and help them gain gainful employment at living wage and be able to return to their families. And their families will be able to visit them also. I set aside rooms just for family members. This has never been done before. And I believe it's one way that we could acknowledge approximately 1 million service people still living who are suffering under these conditions. And if you want to see what a Gulf War citizen, veteran looks like, with no home, no food, no water, no electricity, no bathroom facilities, just living literally in the woods, go over to Titusville, right near Cape Canaveral. Just walk around in the woods. There's 16,000 of them. 16,000. They're not breaking any laws. They're not robbing. There's no crime. They're the forgotten soldiers. Anyhow, we're going to help them. I already support the Daily Bread. Very good organization, by the way. Very, very good. None of the money goes to the high-end executives because there are none. It really, literally goes to feed. So you either give money to the Daily Bread, and there's one in Naples, Florida, and there's one, there may be more. I know there's one over in Titusville because I went there several times, and it just broke my heart to see people who were already sick walking 4 miles to get there to have a meal. They could take a shower there, and whatever clothes that they were able to find, which were cleaned, they could take with them. But that's not a life, and we should not. When you consider at least 1 million people minimum are suffering with post-traumatic stress disorder and 20, average of 22 per day are putting a gun in their mouths at home and blowing their brains out. Now, that's 165,000. 165,000. Twice, more than twice the number of all the American casualties in the Vietnam War. You're right up there with the, you know, the Korean War and the First World War. That was a short war. Deadly. But not a single march, not a single dollar goes to help them. They've been abandoned by everyone. You know, it's just one more group that we should be concerned with and try to help. So we are. Anyhow, so the idea is get a hibiscus tea each day in your diet. Don't get the one with sugar. Just get a hibiscus and brew 3 bags and get the ones with no formaldehyde in the tea bag. And then if you want to add a little stevia, that's fine. Or manuka honey, that's fine. But not when it's hot, but when it starts to cool. And then make that into an iced tea. So you have like a quart of hibiscus iced tea each day. From the German Cancer Research Center comes a study about muscles are being supported with a stronger immune system. So what do I mean? I mean, in the fight against cancer or chronic infections, your immune system must be active over long periods of time. However, in the long run, the immune defense system often becomes exhausted. So scientists at the German Cancer Research Center have now found initial evidence in this laboratory experiment that skeletal muscles help to keep the immune system functioning in chronic disease. In many cases, severe weight loss and a decrease in muscle mass are the result of cancer or dangerous infections, what we call cachexia, the wasting away. In addition to this process, patients often suffer from a weakened immune system. And one of the reasons for this is a loss of function of a group of T cells whose task is to recognize and kill virus-infected cells or cancer cells. The process leading to loss of T cell activity are still largely unexplained. However, first indications suggest that there is a connection with cachexia. It is known that T cells are involved in the loss of skeletal muscle mass. But whether and how in turn skeletal muscles influence the function of the T cells is still unclear. And so what you have to know is do your exercises, because generally people who are sick don't do any muscle exercises. If you don't use your muscles atrophy. Remember the old adage, what you don't use, you lose? That includes your intellect, your creative skills, your spiritual connection, empathy. Use it or lose it. And so keep your immune system strong and you keep your muscles able to help your bones, and a whole series of cascading events won't happen. From another good study, and this is from University of California at Irvine, published in the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology, cilantro, C-I-L-A-N-T-R-O, cilantro, helps delay seizures common in epilepsy and other neurological disorders. Now, if you combine cilantro with cannabinoids, the oil, I believe you have a double positive. So that's important, something that simple. And they've finally figured out the molecular mechanisms behind cilantro's therapeutic effects. It's been studied in the past for its anti-epileptic and other therapeutic activities. But this is new information. And by the way, people have been eating cilantro for over 8,000 years based on the archaeological evidence. So it's been known to have anti-cancer, antifungal, antibacterial, and analgesic effects. And so just include some cilantro. There was also a multi-ethnic study suggesting vitamin K can offer protection as you get older. This is Tufts University Health Sciences. Older adults with low vitamin K had higher death risks over a 13-year period. It's not difficult to get vitamin K. Just take some vitamin K. Real simple. You don't need a lot. 1, 2, 3 milligrams, depending on whether you're getting vitamin K 1, 2, or 3. But this was a multi-analysis study of 4,000 Americans, 54 to 76, one-third of whom were non-white. And this was done at the Jean Mayer USDA Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University, published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And so get your vitamin K and have a much more protected body as you age. Easy, inexpensive, simple. And finally, from Baylor University comes a study called Mindful Hypnotherapy. So mindfulness combined with hypnotherapy aids highly stressed people. Now, the late Dr. Michael Elner, who was a longtime close friend of mine, and he didn't tell me when he had cancer or I could have helped him. And when I, you know, found out through his son why he didn't tell anybody, I mean, we have this whole community where we help one another. It was because he was just embarrassed. I've heard that so many times. Well, people didn't want to call you because they were embarrassed knowing, you know, they had neglected themselves and blah, blah, blah. Well, set all that aside. That's all irrelevant. Saving a person's life is what's relevant. But anyhow, Michael was the one down at the Tri-State Healing Center, and even before the Tri-State Healing Center, in our office at 72nd Street, where we set aside a room where every night of the week, seven nights a week, he would hold a HEAL meeting, health education meeting for people who were sick, who wanted to be educated about being well. It was always packed, and he never charged a person a penny. And I remember once there was a guy who I'd seen marching with ACT UP as one of its leaders. And then 2 years later, he was in the meeting because he had advanced AIDS and they had given him up. And we put him on a protocol and reversed his AIDS. In fact, he's one of the people in the film I have, a new documentary. And by the way, if you don't know, I have a brand new documentary up on PRN.fm. You'll scroll down and you'll see AIDS is not a death sentence. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes long. That's a long documentary. And there's not a wasted second in it. And in it, I prove scientifically with absolute charts and blood reports and testimonials from the patients and medical doctors, nurses, and everyone else that we were able to reverse end-stage AIDS and HIV infection at the Tri-State Healing Center, and 8 people at the Institute of Applied Biology, and 10 people. And there's the senior research fellow in cancer and AIDS research, Dr. Elena, over at the Institute. I remember the day they came upstairs. They never came upstairs. She did, and one other scientist came upstairs on a daily basis to see what I was working on. And they said, every patient we're treating for AIDS is dying. I said, what therapy are you using? Well, they were using AZT. And I said, well, you're killing them. AZT kills people. But we don't know what to do. I said, well, okay, will you help us? I said, sure. And so I put together protocols, and they organized a room and got special nurses for it, and took about a month. And it was set up just like the Tri-State Healing Center. And people got very high doses of vitamin C intravenous and high glutathione pushes and vitamin B12, and they got juices 6 times a day there, bitter melon juice, and they had mushroom maitake defraction. In a way, it was a comprehensive protocol, and not a patient died. But not just that, but I asked some of the patients, would you like to be on an accelerated protocol, not coming in once a week, but coming in once a day for 6 days, and they said yes. All 10 reversed their HIV status and reversed all opportunistic infections. Their T cells returned to normal. And it's there. You hear her actually saying it. But here's what she did. When she had had 7 strokes and was on her deathbed, she wrote me a letter. I hadn't heard from her in 15 years. And she had been with the Institute all these years. My God, it must be 60 years. She had no life. All she had was her research, very dedicated. And she said in the letter that she wanted to get this off her chest, that for all these decades, we had absolute irrefutable proof about me reversing HIV status and AIDS in patients. And the whole board of scientists recognized it, saw the reports, because these were Institute patients, not mine, and they decided to withhold it. They decided to, in effect, cover it up. And she was there the night that she made the pitch that we should release this because it will save millions of lives. No one had done it. And they said, we can't because of our funding. It comes from big pharma companies. And they would stop our funding. Who's going to pay for all the bills, for all the research, all the, you know, for the chemotherapies that we're working on and the pain medication? And so I never was told. I never knew what happened with the information. And that's what happened. Well, you see her letter. We printed it. And you see her. And she says it. Says it. So this is irrefutable objective proof with all the it's there in that documentary. Watch the documentary and then read Wikipedia, where every single thing on there is a lie about me. But we have a surprise coming at Wikipedia. It's never been done before, ever, not once. And Richard Gale and I were talking this morning while I was dictating a new article. It's going to be out tomorrow, but we'll let you in on what we're doing tomorrow. But anyhow, watch the documentary. It's brand new, okay? Anyhow, for tonight, what we're going to do, we're going to put on something very upbeat and inspiring. At a time when people need some inspiration, we're going to have a whole hour on very inspirational, can-do, uplifting talk tonight. But this is saying, and Michael Ellner used to take people who were feeling down and out, stigmatized, biased against because they had AIDS, and he would put them under hypnosis and give them positive suggestions. And I mean, some of these people just turned around. He was just such a decent, gentle soul. Really miss him. But he helped thousands and thousands of people. We all have fond memories of Michael Ellner, Dr. Michael Ellner. But it was interesting that day I walked in, and there's that guy who was a hard ass out there in the lines, you know, fighting for more drugs. And I said, it's not more drugs you need to fight AIDS. It's the wrong approach. You'll get your drugs because someone's going to make money off it, turned out Burroughs Wellcome. And then you're going to have organizations within the gay community who will be compromised. They'll go for the drugs because it gives them the money and gives them a standing in the White House. That, where they were excluded, they'll be included. Where they had no power, they'll have power. But it'll all be corrupt. That's exactly what happened. And he acknowledged that. He even acknowledges in the documentary. So you can see this for yourself. So Baylor University, mindfulness combined with hypnotherapy aids highly stressed people. It can help you as well. And by the way, get away from air-polluted areas. University of Eastern Finland showed that exposure to air pollution impairs cellular energy metabolism. And you bet, this is published in Particle and Fiber Toxicology. And oh, you know all those people were you fasting in our anti-aging study? Well, that fasting has been supported in thousands of studies. This is just the latest one. This is Case Western Reserve University. Quote, intermittent fasting effect on metabolic syndrome, prediabetes, and type 2 diabetes. And they're out in Cleveland, Ohio. And it says that it can help if you have metabolic syndrome, if you have prediabetes and diabetes. It could save your life. That doesn't do with aging, but it does do with saving your life. And those of you who've been eating broccoli sprouts, you're getting a chemical called sulforaphane, S-U-L-F-O-R-A-P-H-A-N-E, sulforaphane. It's in broccoli sprouts. It is found to improve glucose levels in diabetics. That's good news. So every diabetic, every day, you can grow your own broccoli sprouts for pennies. You can grow them on your kitchen counter. Takes about 7 days. The last 2 days, you put them in the sunlight and they green out. University of Gothenburg, which is in Sweden, researchers have identified the antioxidant richly occurring in broccoli as the new anti-diabetic substance. So this is the newest study, and this was published in Science Translational Medicine. So that's the latest on health and nutrition, except for you 19-year-olds who are not active. Now, some are very active and athletic and keep themselves in shape, and thank goodness for the influencers in their life, whether it's the parents, grandparents, coaches, teachers, friends, whoever's motivated you to get up and exercise, to be athletic, to honor that body, they're doing you a great service, because Johns Hopkins University School of Public Health just released a study today that shows that 19-year-olds are sedentary as 60-year-olds. Yeah, that's not good. That will age you prematurely. Okay? The more we exercise, the longer we live, the healthier we are. We're 26 minutes into our program. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to come back listening to a statement from Martin Luther King. Please stay with us.
I will always continue to say that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. I'm still convinced that nonviolence is the most potent weapon available to oppress people in their struggle for freedom and justice. I feel that violence will only create more social problems than they will solve.
Okay. He didn't equivocate on that, and he was not, contrary to popular opinion today, he was not generally accepted by much of the African-American community because he was not a hardliner. But then neither was, in the last stage of his life, Malcolm X. Let's hear from Malcolm X about the so-called liberal movement to liberate blacks, to give them their freedom. And by the way, you do remember in 1966, thereabouts, where those who tried to stop and block the Civil Rights Act were the Democrats. Anyhow, there are a lot of people today calling themselves liberal. We're doing something for your benefit. No, you're not. You're pathology. You don't have a decent ethical issue in your blood. Don't listen to me about it. Here's Malcolm X.
There are many whites who are trying to solve the problem, but you never see them going under the label of liberals. That white person that you see calling himself a liberal is the most dangerous thing in the entire Western Hemisphere. He's the most deceitful. He's like a fox. And a fox is always more dangerous in the forest than the wolf. You can see the wolf coming. You know what he's up to. But the fox will fool you. He comes at you with his mouth shaped in such a way that even though you see his teeth, you think he's smiling. You take him for a friend.
Okay. We have a lot of people say they're doing something for our good, and we want to believe it. After all, we don't have the power. They do. We cannot call a press conference and the people come and cite us. They can. And historically, across the board, and it started with the putrefaction of the Clintons' co-presidency, that rough-ass tag team match, and they were smart. They were smarter than everyone else. They were so smart that you haven't seen anyone go up against him for all of the things he did and or her. They've been able to skate through everything. You and I, no, we wouldn't have that. So just be conscious of the people who claim that whatever they're doing for your good. They're never doing it for your good. There's an ideological, financial, or political agenda behind every single action. And also, I'm very disappointed in the Supreme Court. Why? Because John Whitehead has elucidated, and by the way, we are starting in the very near future, I'm talking about in the next 3 weeks, we're going to do a GoFundMe where the Rutherford Institute and John Whitehead and Danny Sheehan, two of the best constitutional lawyers in America, will be taking on the cause of fighting the federal government now so we can challenge them on their right to use our bodies as a human experiment with an untested coronavirus vaccine that will be mandatory, with the consequences that you cannot imagine. Do you really think you're going to go into the quiet American's home and vaccinate them or take away their children? You do that, any violence you see now, it'll be like an atomic bomb going off, because there are 250 million of them, angry, quiet, and watching. So you think the people on the streets are tough? They don't know tough. You think that they're capable of pushing back? No. With black masks and, you know, burning down buildings, doesn't mean diddly squat. You take on the wrong people in this country, and you're going to see pain and suffering like you've never seen. And that, I believe, will come when they say everybody's got to get an experimental vaccine, because we got to make sure that your body is under our control. And you think, well, how's that possible? Well, the Supreme Court will probably allow it because they have in the past, but we're taking a whole different approach to protect your rights. So if you want to be vaccinated, get in line and get all the vaccines. You want a million vaccines, you want to be vaccinated till you actually die and still believe in them, frothed at the mouth and your guts turn green, that's your right. You have a right to kill yourself if you want. But you also have a right to say, no, I want to honor my body. And if you don't have the science to back up that crap you're putting in me, and every single ingredient, every single vaccine has been proven to be toxic, there's not a single ingredient in any vaccine the body needs, and every single thing in every single vaccine ever created is dangerous, well, I choose not to have that. And I have the Nuremberg rules on my side, and that superseded any national or state government's control over my body. That's a universal declaration. And we were one of the signatories, Dr. Andrew Ivey, one of the greatest scientists in American history, probably the most cited scientist in American history, University of Illinois. He was one of the jurists. So despite growing calls to hold police accountable for using excessive force in non-threatening circumstances, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to review any cases challenging the doctrine of qualified immunity, which shields police from liability for official wrongdoing. Now just ask yourself, is official wrongdoing, which you cannot sue for, anyone at any agency, no military personnel, anything, is that any less a moral crime than having an unofficial wrongdoing where there's no liability? It's an oxymoron. Wrong is wrong. A wrongful death, wrong imprisonment, wrong search and seizure, wrong torture is wrong by any standards. So the 9 qualified immunity cases in which the court denied cert involved a SWAT team's destruction of a home by bombarding it with tear gas grenades, a police dog that was ordered to attack a man who had already surrendered, and the mistaken shooting of a 10-year-old boy by a cop who was... you get it. This happens all the time. Attorneys Jessica Ring Emmonson and Andrew Knoll, they assisted the Rutherford Institute with this amicus brief, and the court refused to hear any of it. The court refused to hold the police accountable for official misconduct, and it's a chilling reminder that in America, and we have a police state, I've been telling you this for 20 years, America is a totalitarian, oligarchical, duopoly police state. But if you haven't yet been touched by it, you will be. You've been because of this stupid lockdown. Everything they've told you about the coronavirus has been wrong. Is it a real virus? Yes. Was it man-made? Probably. That's the evidence at this point. Is it highly lethal? No. But it is lethal for those who have compromised immune systems. Now they've just added diabetes. They've just added obesity as one of the comorbidities that if you get the virus, you can die from. Well, that doesn't bear well in America, where we have more adult diabetes and obesity than any other country per population in the world. We're just one fat nation, not because of genes, not because of underactive thyroid, because of indifference to honoring our body and maladaptation to giving ourselves comfort. So we eat ourselves to death. So our knife and fork should be considered unlicensed weapons. But it won't be, and people won't change because they don't change. And I've seen that closer than anybody. I just finished with 2 separate groups of senior citizens. Phenomenal results. But it wasn't easy. And anywhere else, they would have stopped the study, because the people were just too damn difficult to deal with. That didn't mean that they were not nice people. It meant that they were stuck in their ways. But fortunately, I said, this study counts, and you count. And so even if I have to argue with you to save your life, I'm going to. You know, and that's what happened. But in the end, they all did spectacularly well. And that's what's important. And our next study is only going to, I won't go into it yet. But there are no senior citizens allowed in that one. You can thank these people for that. Well, there's some comments people have about seniors that are actually accurate. But I'll deal with that on another occasion. So what we have to understand is that we're not holding the average American accountable for any bad mistakes they make. But then again, we don't hold the police accountable for any mistakes they make. We don't hold anyone accountable in official positions. So you can screw up all you want. You can be as loathsome, you can be a diabolical genocidalist. Well, you got Barack Obama started 7 international campaigns and killed over 1 million people, and he's applauded. They want him in Martha's Vineyard. They love that man. Bill Clinton. If Bill Clinton walked down the street tomorrow with a box of cigars, wanting interns naked from the waist down, he would be able to be the most popular guy on that block. That's the insanity of being tied into the cult of personality that we have in this country. That's the reality. No, these people have caused more suffering than anyone since Pol Pot. Whole governments, whole countries have been destroyed. Libya, Syria. And yet, not a word from the media. That's why I thought it was important to play that piece from Malcolm X. I've got a lot more from Malcolm X, who has a lot to say about those who tend to want to protect us. But just some final thoughts. I want to share a commentary from Chris Hedges. It's called Gaslighted by the Ruling Class. And this is from the editor, special to SheerPost.com. Quote, "We are trapped in an abusive relationship. When we finally have enough of our abuser, comes after us with flowers and apologies, promising never do it again. Police take the knee. NASCAR and the U.S. Marine Corps ban the display of the Confederate flag. Nancy Pelosi uses a scarf as a political prop. Joe Biden, one of the driving forces behind militarized police, the massive expansion of mass incarceration, and the doubling and tripling of sentences, speaks at George Floyd's funeral. The National Football League apologizes for its insensitivity to racism, although no teams appear to be negotiating with Colin Kaepernick. The mayor of Washington, D.C., Muriel Bowser, had the words Black Lives Matter painted in 35-foot-tall letters on a street near the White House, but also at the same time proposed a $45 million increase in the police budget and the construction of a $500 million new jail. The press, which does not confront corporate power and rarely covers the poor, rendering them and their communities invisible, engages in circular firing squads, sacking or admonishing editors and journalists for racially insensitive thought crimes to advertise its commitment to people of color. Once again, we see proposed legislation to mandate police reform, more body cameras, consent decrees, revised use of force policies, banning chokeholds, civilian review boards, requiring officers to intervene when they see misconduct, banning no-knock search warrants, more training and de-escalation tactics, a requirement by law enforcement agencies to report use of force data, nationally enforced standards for police training and greater diversity, proposals made, in several cases adopted, in the wake of numerous other police murders, including those of Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Philando Castile. The Minneapolis Police Department, for example, established a duty to intervene requirement by police. Oh, that was in 2014, in the killing of Brown and Ferguson. These requirements did not save Floyd. Police unions, often little more than white hate groups, continue to have the unassailable power to brush aside would-be reformers, including community review boards, mayors, and police chiefs. These unions generally bankroll the campaigns of elected officials, including public prosecutors, who do their bidding. Police unions and associations have contributed $7 million to candidates running for office in New York State alone, including $600,000 to Andrew Cuomo during his gubernatorial campaign. It is, as Yogi Berra said, deja vu all over again. The public displays of solidarity are, as in the past, smoke and mirrors, a pantomime of faux anguish and empathy by bankrupt ruling elites, including most black politicians groomed by the Democratic Party and out of touch with the daily humiliation and stress and economic misery and suffering that defines the lives of many of the protesters. These elites have no intention of instituting anything more than a cosmetic change. They refuse to ask the questions that matter because they do not want to hear the answers. They are systems managers. They use these symbolic gestures to gaslight the public and leave our failed democracy, from which they and their corporate benefactors benefit, untouched. What we're watching in this outpouring of televised solidarity with the victims of police violence is an example of what Bertram Gross called friendly fascism, the nice guy mask, used to disguise the despotism of the ultra-rich and our corporate overseers. Whatever you think about Donald Trump, he is at least open about his racism, lust for state violence, and commitment to white supremacy. The crisis we face is not, as the ruling elites want us to believe, limited to police violence. It is a class and generational revolt. It will not be solved with new police reforms, which always result, as Princeton professor Naomi Murakawa points out in her book, The First Civil Right, How Liberals Built Prison America, is less accountable, larger, and more lethal police forces. The problem is an economic and political system that has been designed and created into a nation of serfs and obscenely rich masters. The problem is deindustrialization, offshoring of manufacturing, automation and austerity programs that allow families to be priced out of for-profit health care systems and see nearly one in five children, 12 and younger, without enough to eat. The problem is an electoral system that has legalized bribery designed to serve a tiny, unaccountable cabal of oligarchs that engage in legalized tax boycotts and deregulation theft and financial fraud. The problem is that at least half of the working class and working poor, a figure growing exponentially as the pandemic swells the ranks of the unemployed, have been cast aside as human refuge and are being sacrificed on the altar of profit as the country reopens for business and the pandemic crashes in wave after wave in front of our workers. The problem is the diversion of state resources, including over half of all federal discretionary spending, to an unaccountable military machine that wages endless and futile wars overseas, the savage face of white supremacy beyond our border. This military machine perfects its brutal tactics and tools for control on people of color in the Middle East, as it did in the other eras of Vietnam and Latin America and the Philippines. It passes on this knowledge along with its surplus equipment, including sophisticated equipment for wholesale surveillance, drones, heavy arms, SWAT teams, grenade launchers, and armored vehicles to police at home. Smashing down a door and terrorizing a family at night in a police raid in Detroit looks no different at night as a police raid against an Afghan family by Army Rangers in Kandahar. Empires eventually consume themselves. Of the Athenian Empire that the tyranny it imposed on others it finally imposed on itself. The entrenched racism in America has always meant that poor people of color are the first cast aside in a society and disproportionately suffer from the most brutal forms of social control meted out by the police and the prison system. But there will not be, as Martin Luther King pointed out, racial justice until there is economic justice. And there will not be economic justice until we wrest power back from the hands of our corporate masters. Until that happens, we will go through cycle after cycle of brutal police murders and cycle after cycle of profuse apologies and promises of reform. We are trapped in an abusive relationship. When we finally have had enough, when we cry out in pain and walk out, our abuser comes after us with flowers and apologizes and promises to change. But will we go back for more? My hope is that this time around the gaslighting will not work. The protesters that have taken to the streets in some 750 cities are young, diverse, angry, and savvy. Many were betrayed by the Democratic Party hierarchy, who once again ganged up on Bernie Sanders to shove a corporate stooge down our throats. The calculation by the ruling elites being that as awful as Biden is, we will vote for him because he's not Trump. That this tactic failed in 2016 doesn't seem to faze the oligarchs. Many of those in the streets can't find meaningful work, are often burdened by large sums of student debt, and have realized that in this world of serfs and masters, they don't have much of a future. They understand that if these protests are to succeed, they must be led by people. And so it goes. But then I have this also. Why aren't we protesting out in front of the homes of the 10 million millionaires and the 2,000 oligarchs and the companies that they own, the companies that engage in some form of profiteering off the public? And when they make a dollar, it rests a dollar out of our pockets for those hedge funds and those equity partners who have bought corporations where people were gainfully employed, who had a living wage, where there was a time where one parent could stay at home and tend to the needs of the children, which has historically been done throughout the world while the other goes out and tends the fields or does outside work. We're now two parents together working both and sometimes double shifts cannot make their bills. So when in 2007, beginning of 8, we gave a free get-out-of-debt check to all major corporations, all of Wall Street banks, we gave them more money than what they were asking for, as did Clinton give $10 billion more than what the military-industrial complex budget actually requested. It was an embarrassment. All you had to do is look what he was buying, loyalty. Because any time a president leaves office, he always leaves stay-behinds, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 stay-behinds. They can't be fired. They're the technocrats. And so once you realize that Clinton stay behind and Obama stay behind, believe in the same thing, and then it's not difficult to understand why everybody supported just Hillary Clinton. So if everybody, including the deep state and all the media and all the banks and all the private prison systems and all the credit card companies and all of Wall Street and all the manufacturers and Monsanto and its poisonous chemicals and DuPont and Syngenta, and if all the big pharma and all the hospital corporations, everybody supported her, shouldn't that alone have been enough to let you know why do they want to see her in power? Because they maintain their profit and power. It's that simple. It's a quid pro quo. And it'll be no different with Joe Biden. And when we believe that maybe this guy named Barack Obama was for peace, we gave him a Nobel Prize for peace, and he became the most murderous president, most draconian president. He had to smile and shoot a basketball and make you feel like, you know, this is a guy like my next-door neighbor. But he wasn't. He doesn't live next door to you. He never has and he never will. We didn't look into his background. We didn't want to look too closely because it was a truth we could not bear. He told us about hope and change. Boy, we all needed that, and none of us got it. Those who were rich and powerful got everything they wanted. Those who were white-collar criminals got what they wanted. And average people were told if you got marijuana, you go to jail for 7 years. And none of that stopped. The private prison system, debtors' prison systems, punitive interest rates, 1,000% interest on PPP loans. None of that was challenged. That was Joe Biden, by the way. But Barack Obama enabled it. So you see, we the people at some point have to stop pretending that we care and become educated about these issues. When we do, then we'll start looking for third-party candidates outside the system who have not been captured and are not corrupt. From City University of New York's Graduate School of Public Health and comes a new story today as food insecurity continues to plague New Yorkers. Impact on children is worrisome. Turns out that 1 in 4 households with children have reported a child experiencing hunger as a result of COVID-19 health crisis. And many New Yorkers continue to report difficulties in getting the food they needed. But a particular concern is the impact on households with children under the age of 18. About 1 in 3 of these households reported that since the epidemic started, a child has lost weight, and almost 1 in 4 reported a child had been hungry because they couldn't get enough food to feed them. So that's really serious. And why aren't we marching and demonstrating on behalf of hungry children? It doesn't matter what their ethnicity. Children aren't racist. Children just want to share the joys of their life, and we should also be concerned. I'd like to see those of us who have extra food give extra food in some way to these, donate them to food banks or donate time at food banks. But that will only help get you a meal. That doesn't change the underlying circumstances. Here's my suggestion, and I'd like for anyone who can to pass this forward to City Hall, to the governor's office, to the mayor, the policymakers in the state. Why not have the state, since it has billions of dollars that it's spending, why not spend some of that by giving food cards to families that can show that they have food insecurity, and give these for 6 months, and then they can reapply. That way, no one has to go hungry. No child has to go hungry. The person qualifies, they get a card, and that card allows them to buy, you know, food, and then that gives them an allowance, or the state is billed for it. Work in cooperation with different food stores. I think that would be easy to do, and there's no reason it can't be done. After all, we get food stamps, so it's that way everybody who has a hungry child or themselves are hungry won't go starving. Just something to think about. Additionally, this is from the White House's efforts to secure a vaccine. From Politico, that they're saying that the White House pressure for a vaccine raises risks. The U.S. will approve one that doesn't work. Drug makers and health agencies have already begun rewriting the rules of vaccine research. Quote, President Donald Trump has promised that there will be a coronavirus vaccine before the year is out. But public health experts are growing increasingly worried that the White House will pressure regulators to approve the first vaccine candidate to show promise without proof that it provides effective, reliable protection against the virus. Drug makers and health agencies have already begun rewriting the rules of vaccine research, launching candidates into clinical trials at record speed in search of a pandemic-ending shot. Data on the vaccine safety is already trickling in, but no candidate is yet ready for the final step of the development process, a months-long trial in tens of thousands of volunteers to prove once and for all whether the shot works. That tight timing, coupled with a high-pressure political environment, has experts concerned that the Food and Drug Administration would grant emergency use authorization to one or more vaccines before clinical trials have definitely determined whether they can prevent infection. Okay, here's my thoughts on this. This is an absolute repeat of the disastrous AZT trials back in the mid-1980s, where GlaxoSmithKline was doing fast-track approval of AZT, a drug so toxic, so dangerous, that when we interviewed the maker of it at the National Cancer Institute, he said it was thrown on the junk pile with all the research records because it was too toxic even to give to terminal cancer patients. And yet completely healthy, mainly gay men, were given this because they showed an HIV-positive status within an accurate, in a very inaccurate study, because the test was only supposed to test for HIV antibodies, but it turns out it tested you for herpes and malaria and tuberculosis and pregnancy. All these other conditions, over 70 different conditions, could give you a false positive test. Now, the head of that study came to me, or not the head of it, but one of the major researchers, Lynn Gannett, and she gave me documents after documents showing that the FDA knew that it wasn't a good study, knew that there were falsified data in it, and they passed it anyhow. And hence, tens of, if not hundreds of thousands of people died, not from AIDS or HIV infection, but because of the drug side effects. We don't want that to happen again, and that's exactly what I believe will happen again, unless you have a multiple-year study that is carefully reviewed for safety and efficacy. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.